I found to have gotten the most satisfaction in my career from effectively listening to people. That starts with the seeds of what do I want, and making that and saying, do other people want this? And if they do, then listening to them and then figuring out, like, okay, what else do you want? How else do you want this to change? Do you want it in a different form? Like, having touch with people and them giving me feedback so I can iterate on things and improve and provide value for people is like sort of what keeps me going every single day.
On this week's podcast, I had the pleasure of sitting down with my buddy, Anthony Gustin. He was here in Costa Rica for the official launch of Lineage Provisions, our new company making animal-based food. Our first product is the meat sticks, which you'll hear about in this podcast in detail. But it was awesome to get to talk to Anthony about our shared vision for food, snacks, making animal-based convenient, all of the ways that we really wanted to craft Lineage into a very unique brand. And there is a lot of brand story here, the things we didn't want to do, the shortcuts we didn't want to take. So hope you guys enjoy this origin story of the newest thing that I've created with Anthony Gustin, my good friend. And we get into a lot of our history together, going to Tanzania, talking to the Hadza, all the things we've experienced. So there's a lot of cool stuff in here. And I think you guys will get a better appreciation of how companies are built and what is behind the beauty that is and will become even greater in the future of Lineage Provisions. So enjoy this podcast with me and Anthony Gustin. Thanks for coming on the podcast while you're here in Costa Rica.
The last time we were on a podcast together, we had just left Tanzania.
Yes, we did.
Also in Costa Rica.
We were in Costa Rica.
On my balcony at the Airbnb.
Uh-huh.
You had not moved yet?
I sort of was in between living in Costa Rica and living in Texas.
Yeah, it was like the first week, I think, after...
Oh, that was probably the first or second week. That was the beginning of my Costa Rica odyssey.
Yeah.
And now here I am, fully expatriated, not officially.
In the land of the free.
I haven't renounced my citizenship, but yeah, man, it's good to catch back up with you. And I thought we could talk about a lot of things today, but let's start by chatting about food, something I've talked about a lot on the podcast, and our common disdain for the quality of foods in general that people have available, and the lack of easily accessible foods for humans, and sort of why we decided to collaborate and do something cool with this Lineage thing that we got going on now.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I've sort of envied from your perspective being in Costa Rica now, is it seems like there's such abundant growth of food at all times in the year. Whereas even in Bend, where I recently moved, I am always trying to eat local, seasonal, which is amazing during the summertime, but tough during other times of the year. And just in general, living an American life and being in a suburb, going around traveling, the access to actual real food is so abysmal. And this is the thing that has pissed me off the most, honestly, of like not living in the jungle, not having abundant fruit trees in my backyard, et cetera, not having my own farm anymore, which we used to have and produce so much of our own food. And that's still been the sort of like biggest thorn in my side, at least.
How much do you think convenience leads to bad health for people? Like, do you think, I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, I think convenience is a major problem for people, that if there isn't good food easily available, a lot of us don't select good food.
Yeah. I saw something that Casey Means, who's a doctor, one of the founders of Levels, posted recently, talking about one of the underappreciated reasons why we're in this crisis of obesity, health issues, chronic disease. And it was that we've separated the tradition of cooking ourselves and producing your own food. And in the 50s, 60s, prioritized as a culture, convenience. We no longer had anybody at home who was making food, having the home-cooked meals, and deviated towards prioritizing convenience above all else. And I think that if you trace back where I think, and I think you also think, a lot of these problems come from, there's ultra-processed food. I think a lot of the root comes from this quest for convenience, which is something that I think 50 years ago, 70 years ago, like when that first started happening, we have gone so far off track, and most people don't even know how to cook an egg. And like we've lost the skills to grow for sure, but also even prepare our own food.
Or to even hunt our own food now, to gather our food in a grocery store. And this is interesting. So right when we did our last podcast, I was in Costa Rica. That was really the beginning of a change in my content also. Mm. And I started doing a lot of content in grocery stores, which has been interesting. And I think a lot of people have kind of started doing that content since then, but I started out doing content in Costa Rica in grocery stores, shirtless and shoeless, because I had no concept that anyone else in other parts of the world would think that was weird, because here I am in Costa Rica, it's 80 degrees every day, and it's totally accepted to walk into a grocery store without a shirt or shoes. Since then, I've sort of realized the folly of my ways, but that was sort of my intent, to help educate people based on my perspectives of how to hunt our food, which happens in a grocery store most of the time. Obviously, you and I have been on hunting trips together, or have we?
Two different ones.
Yeah.
With the Hods, and then also in Texas for deer.
Yeah. We've been on multiple hunting trips together. We've hunted things together in the, let's quote unquote, real world, but 99% of people listening to this are hunting in the grocery store, and I think that is a lost skill. But even beyond that, I think, like you said, it's so interesting that as humans, we just don't value the time spent put into food preparation now. In fact, it's devalued. I have a lot of friends who are super successful who have said to me in the past, I don't have the time to shop for my groceries or prepare my own groceries. So what do people do? They do DoorDash, they do Uber Eats, and they're just getting all their food. And I think it's important for people listening to this to realize that if you are not sovereign over your food, you are essentially eating ultra-processed food. You are getting food with additives, with oils, with preservatives that you cannot control, that you were not even aware of. And that is certainly affecting your health negatively. I tweeted something the other day, which was, and I believe this very strongly now that I think about it more, and as I was thinking about this tweet, and it's that the tweet was, you're not fat because you eat too much food. And I think that our mainstream society tells us, you're fat because you eat too much food. You're not fat because you eat too much food. You're fat because you eat the wrong food. Mm. And so I think this idea of food quality is something that you and I both hold very dear. And so it's really cool to be able to collaborate with you, creating foods that may help bridge the gap for convenience for people with really freaking high quality foods. I feel so passionate about that I want to just drop an F-bomb there and say, like, really fucking high quality foods. But like, there's a difference. Like, it's hard to find convenient foods that are high quality.
Yeah, and I think as consumers were given convenient foods, we had big food companies established that were prioritized convenience first, and then with that went to profit, and then now it's addiction. And so foods are literally engineered to, one, make money off of you, and two, addict you, so that way you keep eating them.
Yeah.
And no food that's in a package, like, at least not much that I know of, are made to actually nourish humans. And I think that is where, when people go into the grocery store, if you have that filter of, why is this product made? Was it made to truly nourish me? Or is it made to get my attention, make money off of me, and addict me so I buy this again so I can continue to be made money off of? And I think that that is the bifurcation in our food system. And we don't celebrate the people who are actually trying to nourish us, small farmers, people like that, who are making foods for us, not to simply make money off of us.
Yeah.
Huge difference.
I think there's a lot of fake health foods in grocery stores. We've, a couple of times on this trip, we've talked about our mutual disdain for these protein cereals, which are full of pesticides and grains, which are problematic for humans. But in the name of high protein, they're now celebrated as healthy cereals or better cereals. And that's just, I think, a great example of a fake health food.
100,000 times more glyphosate than is shown to cause liver damage in rats in most cereals.
Really?
Yeah, 100,000 times.
It's crazy. And nobody's talking about this.
No.
And in fact, one of the guys on my team just sent me something the other day about another pesticide called chlormaquat in Quaker Oats and Cheerios and, like, the technical...
Who knows what else? I mean...
Yeah. Like, massive pesticides in these foods. And yet, we're never... No, this is never talked about, you know? But these are fake, highly processed foods. So... I mean, let's talk about lineage. Like, I'm proud of this. Let's talk about what we built here.
Well, I think even before that,
not talking about this yet.
The profit that motive that people have, and the addiction, and not having the filter of, we're making this food to nourish people, create supply chains of where people are buying ingredients from to get the lowest price thing humanly possible, and not actually check what is in the food.
Yeah.
There are thousands of different pesticides, herbicides, heavy metals, mycotoxins, microplastics, all of the
PFAs.
Yeah, all of this stuff. And none of these companies are testing for any of this stuff. And I think that when I first started dissecting the problem of big food, I was thinking about, what are the nutrients that people aren't getting? what's missing, the addiction to the food, eating too much, ultra processed, blah, 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 preservatives. But this sort of like hidden nutrition facts panel that should be on a food of all of these environmental toxins that are now getting into the food, I think is just as big of a problem as the nutrients that are missing and, you know, everything that comes into real food, heart, liver, organs, meat, et cetera.
This is a great point. So there's really two things going on here. The idea that if you eat a steak or you eat a piece of liver, you're getting a very micronutrient rich piece of food. Hopefully that steak or liver is from a grass-fed, grass-finished, regeneratively raised, high quality farm. And you're getting things like iron, choline, vitamin K2, you're getting biotin, you're getting folate, you're getting riboflavin, you're getting peptides, you're getting micronutrients like, or minerals like manganese or magnesium or selenium. And you're getting these things which are very absent from processed foods, but hopefully—
And macronutrients that are in amounts and types that we can actually send signals to our body that we're eating the right foods. So for example, seed oils versus the fat that's in a ground beef or steak.
Right.
Very different signal to your body, very different thing happening metabolically.
Absolutely.
You're also getting that as well.
Absolutely. So this is a super important point. The idea that this is what frustrates me about the high level idea of calories in, calories out. Yes, there are laws of thermodynamics that have to do with the creation and destruction of energy and the fact that that doesn't happen. But the idea that all fat is 9 calories per gram and affects you similarly is, I think, completely false. That all protein is created equally, that all carbohydrates are created equally. This is so false to me. And it doesn't account for any food quality.
Our bodies aren't bomb calorimeters.
Exactly.
And this is how you put it in a closed system, then measure it, and then you get a unit of energy.
Heat, yeah.
And if you look at how you drive a vehicle, even if you need fuel in there, and you can put too much fuel in the tank that spills over, that can start a fire and explode the vehicle. But it depends how you drive it, what type of fuel, what's mixed with that fuel. There's so many other things that get a different miles per gallon. The weight of the vehicle, so many different things.
Contaminants in the fuel. Yeah, and we're not machines either. And we're very reactive to this. And this is something that's so interesting for me. And I've often put a lot of effort into trying to communicate clearly for people that there are, these food is information. And beyond macronutrients, when we're talking about macronutrients, we're talking about carbohydrates, fat, and protein, generally speaking. Beyond macronutrients, even within the macronutrients, like you said, there are certain fats, whether it's an 18-carbon omega-6 polyunsaturated fat, which is linoleic acid, versus an 18-carbon saturated fat, like stearic acid, the fats are signaling molecules for our body. Mm-hmm. So just in terms, calories is a horrible metric. Because calorie is a measure of heat. And just because you're putting something in your body that can be burned and that can create heat doesn't mean your body can utilize it if your mitochondria aren't working. So just because you're putting a fuel in your body doesn't mean you can produce energy out of it if you're metabolically unwell. But even beyond that, these foods can have different signals based on what's in there. So this nutrition label is very interesting because it's just basically a few micronutrients, mostly macronutrients, fat, protein, and carbohydrates. And you hear people all the time, I think now, taking the first half step, which is they're looking at a label and they're going, how many carbs are in this? Which I think is the wrong question to ask, but they're at least looking at a label, thankfully. But it's hard for people to look at a label and tell anything about food quality because like you're saying, there's no secondary label that says, oh, this product contains this much, perfluoroalkylated substances, PFAs. This product contains this many microplastics. This product contains this many heavy metals. This product contains this much glyphosate, chloramquat, and other pesticides. And actually, this product contains this amount of linoleic acid or this amount of trans fats or this amount of oxidized fats that aren't. It's so hard for people to know what the quality of a food is.
We didn't have nutrition facts panels on food, I think it was like 25 years ago that they first put them on there.
Crazy to think.
Think about getting a package of food like this and turning it over and seeing nothing. They didn't even have to put ingredients on it.
What?
I remember when I was in grade school and they're like, this thing's rolling out and here's how you read it, which is really interesting. Like that didn't exist before. And I think that most people tend to exist in whatever is present and not be able to understand that there is a future that can exist. And I think that there should be, and it's something that we can talk about later, what I want to do here is put more on the package or at least the website of, here's all these other things that you're talking about. Here's more transparency about what's actually in this besides just the total fat and sodium and fiber.
Exactly.
And that's, I think that that was the level of sophistication when they were doing this, that's probably all we knew. I mean, even looking at what's in the food and talking about the work that Stefan Van Vliet is doing at Utah State, 800 plus more metabolites that are in the food that he's saying like are probably pretty essential to human physiology.
The complexity of food is interesting to me because if you look at a processed food, it's been basically cooked and refined and bleached and deodorized, whether it's an oil or a Cheeto. There's a limited number of things that are actually in that food. Mm. You know, you look at I sometimes will do this in the grocery store when I'm showing people how to hunt in the wild, quote unquote. You can look at a label of Cheetos and it looks like it has a lot of ingredients. And we actually did a reel where we went into a plant-based butcher.
This exists.
LA? It exists in Austin, Texas. Oh, wow. At a Central Market grocery store. They actually have a vegan butcher and they had like vegan meat, right? They had all these different types of vegan meat. And the ingredient label was literally 96 plus things in it, right? Mm. And we think that's ridiculous. And to be fair, a lot of those things were horrible. Monosodium glutamate, like all kinds of fake shit to make something look and taste like fake meat. But there's a database now called foodbee.ca. It's a Canadian database. And if you look at beef, if you look at a steak, there are 42,000 components in a steak. The complexity of a piece of meat is orders of magnitude beyond what we think of.
Yeah.
Steak, protein, plus a little fat. We think of a steak as two things. There are 42,000 components in a steak. There's over 4,000 components in garlic. The idea that's striking to me is that like a whole food, whether it's a plant food or an animal food, is vastly more complex than the reductionistic ultra-processed food that we're making.
Yeah. And I mean, Stefan testing grain-fed, grass-fed, and rotational grazing regenerative beef shows that basically the fingerprint of those compounds, completely different. They're just different foods. They may look the same visually, slightly different. They may taste the same, maybe slightly different, but they are different completely on a molecular level.
Based on what the animal was eating specifically, because he's testing meats.
And the environment, so they're taking in data on stool samples, forage samples, soil samples, what they were eating, when they were rotated, and it's effectively a line up and to the right that shows the practices of the farmer. When they're more species appropriate, the animal is healthier, and you have a much healthier product in the end.
This is the reason that I struggle with chickens.
Right.
And eggs. And I know that on your farm that you had in Texas, you were doing it very intentionally. But that type of chicken and egg is so hard for me to get. Even here in Costa Rica, people always ask, do you eat eggs? Yes, I eat eggs. It's so hard for me to get a chicken that's raised the way it's supposed to be raised, quote unquote. Mm. A chicken that's actually foraging. And, you know, interestingly, I talked to one of the farmers here at the farmer's market. And one of the things I love about being in Costa Rica is they're legit farmers that are up in the mountains outside of where I live. And he has two types of chickens. One of them is called caseros. And they are a chicken that handles the heat better. So they get out of the chicken coop more often. And they're basically outside all the time. So that egg is going to be much more like what I want to eat than a chicken that just stays in an enclosure, even though it's outdoors and is mostly eating grains. I want the chicken to really graze and eat the bugs that it's supposed to eat. This is why I really appreciate ruminants. And by ruminants, I mostly mean cows, but sheep, lamb, goats, bison, these are all ruminants, also deer. These animals can be, you know, more scalably produced in a way where they eat grass from start to finish, and then they're on rotational grazing. That's a very high quality animal.
Yeah.
And appreciative of cows, but I think that if you took a grass-fed cow, for me, a grass-fed, grass-finished, especially regeneratively raised cow, that is a very uniquely nutritious and well-raised animal versus even the best chickens that you're going to get out there right now. I'm very cow biased.
I've put out a request to figure out if there is one commercially produced pork or chicken, like something you could buy at a grocery store, for example, that is species appropriate.
Right.
And I have not found one example. I know of three pork producers. I've probably talked to over 100 farmers. This is why I went with pork and chicken, because I was doing a bunch of tests at my farm to figure out different breeds, different feed sources. Can we get them sort of transitioned away from commercial feeding operations? Even the term pasture-raised chicken and pork, I think, is ridiculous, even if it was done at the best thing, because these animals in their genetics are not pasture-raised animals. They shouldn't be out in the wild on grasslands. Cattle should be, because they're descendants of different type of species, like a bison who should roam grasslands and herds.
Right.
Whereas chickens are jungle fowl. They should be up in the trees here in Costa Rica, eating weird things that grow in jungles. And then we took them
trees,
out.
Trees, yeah.
Yeah. we took them out because they're prey animals. So they should be up in trees away from things that could eat them. And this is why if you have turkeys in the wild, even will go up in trees, in forests. They will not be in pastures because eagles can come and eat them, you know, whatever sort of predator. Pigs, forest dwellers. They are not pasture-raised animals.
Right, right.
And if you put them in a pasture, that actually ruin the pasture because they root. Their species appropriate behavior is rooting, which is great for a forest floor because it turns over the leaves that fall down. It mixes in with the soil. That's great for the ecosystem.
Yeah.
But what a lot of pasture-raised pork producers will do is they'll put rings in their noses so they don't root the pasture up. So that way they can market them as pasture-raised animals. This is where this is how they get their food. This is what they should be doing.
Yes.
And so even when you look at pasture raised, and I don't want to, like, there's a lot of farmers who are trying to do good stuff, and I don't mean to say like that is worse, for example, than anything you would get in a package. It's still a much better food. Like, there's, I think, spectrums to all this type of stuff. Like, pasture raised is for sure better than cage free, free range, et cetera, and commercial pork that's on a concrete slab that has nothing to root. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, we have this class of animals that we're actually eating more of as red meat's being demonized, saturated fats being demonized. I had 8 pigs. It was 8 tons of feed to raise out 8 pigs.
What?
I got the truckload of the feed to raise these 8 pigs. My fucking mind was blown, man. I was like, it was on a semi-truck, like bed truck. It took me about 3 hours to get my tractor for each pallet, 8 of them. I put the forklift in, I went back, and my tractor went like this and slammed down because of how heavy they were. And that was just to raise 8 pigs. That's it.
That's crazy.
And these were like the best. I sprouted the grain. I had 2 separate groups. We can talk about some of the findings if you're interested in that. But they were in, like, we had just cleared out some underbrush of yaupon, which grows a lot in the forest in Texas, and put them in there to clear it up and dig up the roots. So they had access to root like they should. But seeing the amount of food I had to give them daily that was not inherent in the environment, mind-blowing. And if I would have let them go in the same amount of space, they would have died. They would have been in the food. Because like a wild hog has hundreds of acres of access. You can't put a pig in somewhere and have it exhibit a species-appropriate behavior on an actual farm, as far as I'm concerned.
It's very hard.
Yeah.
And so people ask me a lot, eggs, chicken, pork, and this is a more eloquent answer that you've given than I've typically responded with. But the idea is, yeah, it's hard. It's just harder to get these foods in a species-appropriate diet, in a species-appropriate way. And this is one of the things that I think is so great about cattle and ruminants, is that they're meant to be on grasslands. Yep. And it's why I like eating them, because there are scalable operations in place. I mean, we can talk about it when we talk about lineage. I went to Australia and saw some of the farming by Melbourne in Victoria. And it was the best farming I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I literally went to farms that were on the ocean. I mean, it's like in the United States, this, or anywhere else in the world, this type of land would be condos and high-rise hotels. But for some reason, in the south of Victoria, in Australia, it's a freaking farm. And the farm like backs up to the ocean. And so you're feeling the ocean breeze. The grass is super green. And the cows are just there with, the cows have like this $1 million view to the ocean, south to Tasmania and Australia. And there's so much amazing farming there that can happen for these ruminants, because grasslands and cattle just, it makes so much sense.
What's really interesting that I would like to see some research on is how mineral deficient, even cattle that are raised on continuously grazed pastures, if the fields have ever been farmed before, monocrops have effectively pulled all the minerals out of the soil. So even if you restore the pasture, a lot of times you don't get mineral release from the rocks in the soil. And so people add things like Redmond sea salt and get a lot of, that's why cows have salt licks, things like that. But I'm wondering how much comes off of the ocean minerals that just immediately plants straight into the grass. The cattle eat it. Because I mean, the photos and videos you sent of the lushness look like basically Hawaii.
Yeah.
And these animals are just chowing down.
On super green grass.
And we can get into sourcing stuff in a little bit about U.S. versus Australia and supply chain and all this type of stuff. But I think that there's a negative stigma on New Zealand and Australia from a grazing thing, because I think people just want everything American made. But I think that's far more complex than that. But to get back on track, there's a lot of things that should be in food, a lot of things that shouldn't be in food. No one talks about it. No one's thinking about this when they're making a product. And this is, I think, the core thing that has been driving me forward over this, like, 2+ year journey to get this out, is how can we start making alternatives for what people are reaching for convenience with a thoughtful manner of what is in here, what is not in here, and making sure. Because I don't know of any brands that test this stuff.
And doing, like you said, circling back to what you said, doing radical transparency, which is something we want to do with Lineage in the future, and have it on the label, have it on the packaging, and on the website, testing for heavy metals, PFAs, microplastics, glyphosate, and showing people like the quality of what's in there. And
for every batch.
Yeah. And really, really elevating and celebrating food quality, which is not some, there's no metric for that. Mm-hmm. How do you know what the highest quality foods are? But I mean, there are people doing this, you know, but it's just, it's so rare that you see these small batches and this incredible production getting people this high quality food. So yeah, I think convenience is a major problem for people. Most of what's out there is very frustrating for us. And so it was awesome to get to collaborate with you. I mean, I don't know if people know our origin story. I don't know if we've talked about how we met, but it was PaleoFX many years ago when I was a fledgling human in the health space, still carnivore. Anthony's building Perfect Keto. And we just have been friends for, I guess, what, 5 or 6 years now?
Yeah. I think there was a time at that where I opened my pantry and I thought, wouldn't it be awesome if there was a bunch of food that we wanted to eat in here?
That we had curated. Yeah. And I've found that very hard over the years. And increasingly, as I've done these videos in grocery stores, what I continuously come back to is I feel good about recommending most of the meat, whether it's, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of fish. We can talk about why, but the best things I find in grocery stores are unprocessed plant and animal foods, right? It's very hard for me to go into a grocery store and feel super excited about the quality or the intention that goes into much of anything on the inside shelves. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the content that I've done, hopefully valuable for people and not overly repetitive, is just talking about the actual details of what's in those foods, whether it's going to Cheerios and talking about chloramquat and glyphosate, or, you know, going to the protein cereals, or exposing the issues I have with Quaker oats and the glyphosate in there, or these issues with other foods, or carrageenan in these foods. So it's very hard to find anything that's packaged, anything that's manufactured in any way that I would eat, that I would feed to my niece and nephew, my family, that I'd be proud of. And so this is a really cool, I mean, this is not meant to be a sales podcast, but I think that I'm so proud. I think we're both so proud of what we've built that we want to tell people about why we built it this way.
Yeah. And I think that there is a lot of preference for whole foods. Obviously, like you said, this is what people should be eating.
Yes.
But the reality is there's a journey from me that started when I was probably 13. I'm 35 now, and I'm still evolving my thoughts and practices. That's a 22-year journey. And along that way, if I had access to this type of stuff, and I saw this when I was building Perfect Keto, of providing people an alternative option gets them on the off-ramp of the traditional food system so much faster, because we can give them something that actually makes them feel better instead of more drained. When people are reaching for health foods and they're sold health and convenience because all the toxic big food stuff has poisoned people, now they're, instead of going for convenience, people are going for health. Like, what is going to make me healthier? But they reach for something and it actually makes them feel more sick. And so getting something that actually makes them feel better can get them off of this track and getting into eating more real food, which I think is the most important thing.
Joseph says, I am very satisfied with the quality of your beef organs. I noticed immediately the difference between yours and other brands I've tried. I was completely gray, I'm 60, but started getting my hair color back after taking these capsules for about 5 months. I was informed that it is the bioavailable copper in the beef organs. I will be taking your beef organs from now on. Thank you for providing such a remarkable product. How cool is that, guys? There's not a lot of copper in all the foods we eat today, and there's not a lot of copper in muscle meat, but there's a lot of bioavailable copper in liver, which is one of the organs in our beef organs. They also contain kidney, spleen, pancreas, and heart. They're sourced from grass-fed, grass-finished animals in New Zealand, regeneratively raised. I feel very strongly these are the finest freeze-dried organs in a capsule you're going to find in the planet. And in fact, they're the only ones I'm aware of that are in glass. There's been a lot of talk recently about microplastics and how detrimental they are for the environment and for your health. Heart and soil stuff will always be in glass, something we pride ourselves on. You can find us at heartandsoil.co, that's .co. Our mission is to help you reclaim your birthright to radical health. I built these for my family, really, because I knew that my sister, my mom, my dad wouldn't be so inclined to eat liver and heart. but I'm proud of what we've done here with Heart and Soil. Find us at heartandsoil.co, and you can begin benefiting from the unique bioavailable nutrients found in organs that are often not present in a lot of the other foods we eat. So check us out, heartandsoil.co. Back to the podcast.
I love that idea of easy on off ramps, easy on and off ramps, essentially off ramps. You know, somebody's on this super highway, 8-lane highway of processed, ultra processed foods. And what's the first step? Yeah. I think for me, I am probably just kind of OCPD. I just have these sort of rigid tendencies when it comes to my food. And it's been interesting to sort of think like the way that I think about food isn't the way that most people think about food. And so it's been a challenge for me to, but an intentional thing that I've challenged myself with, to find empathy and compassion and think, how can I create something for someone else? Because my fridge is heart, liver, meat, butter, you know, and fruit. Like, it's just super simple, and maybe some brains or some testicles. And most people look in there and they're like, what the hell is this? They've never seen these foods. I don't have any condiments.
Right. But even like when we're traveling, just to show the difference between me and you, is when we were in Tanzania and you took this flight from Austin. I think you came from Austin. And you pull out this jar that's turning green gray. Like, what the fuck is that? Like, oh, I'm bringing some fermented liver. I'm like, what? And over the course of like 2 or 3 weeks, it like got more creepy and disgusting. Like, I'm not ever going to do that. But I had packed stuff where for me, I was like, well, this is the way I eat. This is what I prefer. What can I get? And it was stuff that typically had made me feel worse, but it's like not as bad as fasting for 3 days or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I've wanted something like even compared to you, like, I'm like, this is again, like making something for myself.
Right.
And for people that, so, like, I would say even I am a very extreme person when it comes to this, and I'm nowhere even close to you, but all of my friends and family who have very intentional lenses in how they approach health are still like so many, like, it's just not, for most people, they want to live their lives. This is what we've made our lives work. So it's, for us, it's just, it's a no brainer.
Yes.
And I still want it, but it's like to think about, where is the average person at? Like, this isn't their obsession every day they wake up and think about this all day long.
Exactly.
It's a completely different thing.
But that's what we think about all day long.
Yeah.
And as we dream about and go to sleep. Yeah. But there was this jar of, like, people may have heard of high liver. I don't remember.
It was low.
It was high. So it was like, I think it was like a pound. It might've been a pound or 12 ounces of liver in a jar.
Yeah.
And I just figured, oh, you can just ferment liver. I don't do this now, just so people know. But I did at the time. I thought, I'm not going to have access to refrigeration. I'm not going to have access to any liver that I actually want to eat in Tanzania. I don't know how much access I'm going to have to meat. I also took just some jerky from a deer that I think we had hunted together at Rome Ranch.
Yep.
And but I took jerky and I took this liver were the main things that I had, but there wasn't something like Lineage. There wasn't a meat stick that I could just take packages to travel. And
well, even like that, like, first of all, the stench that came off of the jar every time you opened it was so foul. I had to leave the room anytime. It was just like, I trust my nose, and that was not good to eat. But even like when we were in Tanzania eating from the sketch butchers at the side of the road, when we were with Jasper at that one, like, I would have much rather had Lineage sticks with me eating that, like, hands down, knowing that this is the best quality.
Yeah.
Than whatever we were choking down that day.
And people have asked me this a couple times. I don't know how relevant it is for most people listening, but like, what, because I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail when I was 21. I hiked from Mexico to Canada. It was 2,700 miles. And it was all on a trail. It's a continuous trail. People have asked me, I think there's increasing interest in long distance hiking or backpacking now, which I think is amazing. People have said, what would you eat on the trail? Again, this is the kind of stuff that would be, it's incredible. It's like this, and there's a history of this, of humans. Like, humans have been making, like, smoked meats, dried meats, air-dried meats. Humans have been doing this to preserve meats for hundreds, if not thousands of years.
Thousands, for sure.
Yeah. Pemmican bars. These are all Native American traditions. And so it's interesting. This is along a lineage of humans that's very compatible with where we've come from.
Yeah.
When you kill a large animal and you can't eat the whole thing in your tribe, you want to preserve the meat. How do you do it? You smoke it, you air dry it, you do these things.
We both believe in the power of organs. We both have organ products, because what we've heard from people is that they don't know where to buy them. You don't know how to make them. They don't want to taste them. They want them in convenient forms. And even still, I know so many people who don't want to take more pills, and they don't, like, they want to eat real food. And this is another way of, how can we get organs in a food form that tastes delicious? Is sort of like what I've been thinking about and obsessing about for like over 2 years now, which has been a very hard problem to solve. But yeah, I mean, this is it.
Yeah, so I think that whenever I talk about things that I've built and I sell, I always feel a little conflicted, but then I think about the quality and the intention that goes into things, and I feel mostly proud of these things. These are not intended to be sales pitches. These are intended to be products that I created, that you created, that we're now creating together that make people's lives easier. We want people to eat steak, to eat liver, and to eat heart that's fresh, whether it's honey, which will hopefully produce in lineage, or you know, any type of fruit product. I think that there is, what I've said to people throughout all the content I've done is, I prefer that you don't take desiccated Oregon supplements like Heart and Soil makes or whatever. I want them to eat the fresh organs. And what I consistently hear is, that's great, thanks. I'll take the capsules. Yeah. So lineage is not meant to be a meat stick that you live on. It's meant to be an off ramp, like you said, and something that helps your life become easier and better. And we also still prefer that you eat fresh liver and heart and cook a steak on the grill with your friends and your family. Having said that, we're both extremely proud of this because of the quality that went into it. You and I have really been thinking about creating this for 2 years, 50 trials.
Just for people thinking about this as a sales pitch, I did not want to work as long and hard as I have on this. Like, I did not want this to have to exist. It's been something that's been gnawing at me for so long. And if I wanted to make money, the literal last thing I would do is make a meat stick product. Like, this is not the way to make a lot of money. And this is not at all why I made it. It very purely is something that I wanted to exist for myself. It was like, fundamentally, I think that when I have ideas of things, and this has happened in the past as well with different products that I've launched, is it's been a thing that's been eating away at my brain of like, I want this to exist for myself, and I will think about it constantly until I sort of like get it out of my brain and make it, and then enjoy it as sort of like the first customer, so to speak. And this has been, for me, like a very selfish product to make in that regard.
Yeah.
And I have been crushing them. Like, the goal for me was to make something. I mean, I got this trying to copy Elon Musk and be one millionth of an entrepreneur that this guy is. But his whole philosophy around, if you want to make an electric car that has high adoption, you can't just make a car that's electric. You have to make the best car. Mm-hmm. And so I've tried to adopt that with all the things that I've done. Is like, it needs to be the best thing. And so my quest is like, it needs to be the best meat snack that I have ever had.
Not the cheapest.
Yeah.
You know?
The best.
Exactly.
The best from every experience.
The highest
possible.
Quality. Yeah. Yeah. The highest.
When I have a dream list of like, here's a checklist of every single thing that I want in this, typically it's very ridiculous.
Exactly.
And people tell me like, you can't do that. And I was told that about this 2 years ago, like, you can't do that.
Right.
Like, you can't have no preservatives. You can't have none of this stuff. You can't have really good quality. Like, you got to compromise somewhere. And just like I've done in the past, like, I've just ran my skull through a brick wall until I like get through eventually.
Yeah.
It's very painful, but.
But I think that's an interesting pattern that you hear from successful entrepreneurs throughout history, is they've almost all been told, you can't do that. Mm. I think Edison was told that, you know, like, I'm sure Elon was told that. You can't make that car. Well, okay, sure. You don't know how to make this car.
Yeah.
You know?
Yet.
Yes, exactly. But that's what's interesting and exciting for us about projects like this. Like, okay, cool. No one has established the supply chain. No one knows how to make this stick with organs. Let's figure it out.
Yeah. And that's why I'm interested in doing the podcast, not to have a sales pitch, but just like have documented some place where when people say like, oh, this is just another meat stick.
Right.
I go, no, buddy. Go listen here and hear the backstory and like what actually it took to make this.
Yeah.
I truthfully do not think that there's anything like this, nor that anybody could do anything like this currently that I'm aware of.
Because there are other meat sticks on the market. Yeah. And I think that in the podcast, I want to tell people why we decided to make this one different in some ways. But, you know, from the outset, we said 2 years, 50 freaking trials.
54.
54. There were so many wasted meat sticks, unfortunately. So many, you said, your wife spit them out at you multiple
across
times.
Across the table, just looked at me with complete disgust.
Gross.
Couldn't believe me again.
Yeah. It's very difficult. It's good, 'cause it's not easy. And so let's talk about how it's different
Let's talk about what it is, maybe.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about what it is. So it's a 100% grass-fed, grass-finished, regeneratively raised meat stick with heart and liver. We use vinegar to help preserve the freshness in place of other preservatives that we didn't want to use. Vinegar is a natural product that we're proud of in there. We use a sea salt, and we have a collagen casing around...
Beef collagen.
Beef collagen casing around the outside of it, and they're air-dried. So they're a uniquely made stick. They're air-dried for 5 days, right?
Yep.
And they are from inputs are beef from these amazing farms in Australia, Oregon's from Australia, and U.S. regenerative farms
yep.
for the heart and the liver. And that's it. There's no other weird preservatives. There's no nitrates, no nitrites, no celery powder, no lactic acid. They're air-dried versus cooked.
No pepper, no spice, nothing.
No spice.
And this has been the thing too of not like if we can't make a good tasting product without all the extra stuff.
Exactly.
And most people start there, like what can we add to it to make cover up whatever off taste?
Exactly.
Like, no, we must have
the simple.
The classic.
And
it must be good. It must be phenomenal.
And it's called classic because we intend to make other flavors that you guys are going to ask for. Whatever you guys want, we'll make for you.
And this is where Paul's pain in the ass.
Yes, I am a pain in the ass
like,
here.
I'm like, I want these things. Like, no. Like, we can't have X, Y, and Z. We can get into the details about these things. But it's been, I think, a great collaboration because not that it would be compromises, but I think that we both have such a high standard that when paired together, it is literally, like, I don't imagine anybody else being able to have such a high standard and also be able to pull this off. So I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it, too. And it's been amazing to collaborate with you. Like, there's a lot of intention that went into these because I, just like you said, you wanted to make something that you would eat. I wanted to make something that I would eat.
And I'm a picky, way higher of a standard than me.
In some ways, I'm a picky dude, you know, yeah. I'm a picky dude. And so that's what they are. Those are the ingredients and they're super simple. They taste amazing. And I'm so excited. So when we're recording this podcast the day after we launched and we sold out already, but when this podcast comes out, we should be restocked. We're going to ramp up production and we won't have problems with selling out soon enough, but they're made from small batches. To use grass-fed, grass-finished, regeneratively raised beef is like, no other meat stick is doing this. There are other grass-fed meat sticks on the market, but to use this quality of meat...
Okay, I need to break this down on the grass-fed thing.
Yeah.
So there's other grass-fed meat on the market as ground meat that's really cheap in retail stores. And there's really cheap sticks that are grass-fed that are in stores. I've done the math and I've talked to 100 plus different suppliers in farms. There is no possible way that these are truly grass-fed, grass-finished the way people think they are, which is effectively regenerative farming. That's what, when people think of grass-fed, grass-finished, when they see that name on a label, they think of the farms in Australia that we went to and like all these places
super green grass.
That are lush, sparsely populated with cows, not a big feedlot. When you get really cheap grass-fed, which sometimes comes from Brazil, sometimes comes from the US, sometimes comes from other countries as well, it's actually the same thing as a grain-fed feedlot. They're fed alfalfa pellets. They're fed grass-like things that are just not grain-producing yet. So grains effectively are the seeds of grasses. They're just fed grasses that have not gone to seed yet, pushed into a pellet, added with preservatives, and added with preserve, little monkey fell off a branch there.
No, it's a branch. It was a branch. No monkeys were harmed.
So Stefan Van Vliet in his study, he can see this in a lot of grass-fed meat when he tests it. They're synthetic forms of the actual vitamins and minerals. And so
added to these pellets.
Added to the pellets, but they can still say grass-fed because they're not given technical corn and soy. And so the only way that they can achieve an input cost that can make the product cost low enough, especially to be on retail shelves. Like, we can't be on retail shelves yet, and I'll talk about that later why as well. We don't have the margin. And so to have brands that have really cheap prices in retail means that their input cost, now that I know like what it takes to make one of these things, has to be so low that it's literally impossible to have a grass-fed, grass-finished meat stick. And so these huge corporations are basically gaming the system to call it grass-fed. Nobody looks in their supply chain. Nobody goes to the actual farms where they're getting these things from. And so they're just like, oh, it says grass-fed in the spec sheet. I'm going to put it in my product so I can say it's grass-fed. Great. And they stop asking questions. What I hate about myself sometimes is like, I always ask the extra, like, well, what is it? Like, can we go? What's going on? What do you feed it?
Yes.
Are you rotating? Like all these things. And that leads to a much higher input cost that nobody else is willing to do. Like, I don't know of anybody using a truly regenerative meat source in any meat product, let alone a stick like this.
And this is where the issue of transparency comes in, and why we want to hold this so closely in our values with this company is because we want to show what is under the hood in our meat sticks. We want to show the nutrients, the micronutrients, the absence of these synthetic vitamins, because we're not using farms that are going to feed them pellets. The word that I've heard used is greenwashing, and I think it's a little bit confusing for people. It basically means you're getting grass pellet fed cows that are called grass fed and not actual grass on a green farm fed cows.
There are so many farms that Josh and I chatted with asking for two things. One is, do you have information about your practices? Two is, can we visit the farm? And the amount of no's that we got, or you can know once you get to a certain volume of purchasing. Like, what? How does that make any sense? Like, I have to buy from you and then sell the product to consumers before I know what's actually in the product that you're giving me? It was about a 90% no when to grass-fed suppliers, where we asked, can we visit the farm? Do you have a spec sheet on like an affidavit that you'll sign that says you do these practices? No, over and over and over again.
Wow.
Insane.
So we talked about 2 years, 50 trials. Even before we got to 54 trials of meat sticks.
Getting the input to be able,
figuring out where we were going to source from. You know, it wasn't just like, and it's the same. We hold the same standards with the organ capsules that we make. This is why I think the quality, we see the same things, because there are inputs into organ capsules that are Chilean, Argentinian sources for the organs, and people don't generally have the same quality of effect with that in terms of the organ capsules. So the same sort of ethos that went into doing all the other businesses we're doing, like, goes into making the meat sticks, which is, what is the best, highest quality we can put in here? Yep. Because that's what we're super proud. And you and I talked about this, but this is a really cool thing that I think everyone listening to this will understand. Like, it's the best part of this. One of the best parts of this for me is giving it to my family and being proud of it. You know, giving it to Ground Zero, which is my bloodline, and being proud of what I'm sharing with them in terms of quality. That's really cool.
And you can always take something that's the best and make it cheaper. But if you make compromises from the beginning and just try to make something cheap, it's hard to make that the best.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? This is the same thing that Elon did with Tesla, is you start with the Roadster, then get that technology, then put it in the Model S, then the Model 3, and then now they're working on a $20,000 vehicle. Like, they did it at the highest end. What is the best possible, craziest car we can make? And then now they've taken that technology and now they've made it more accessible to more people. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do here with this, as far as, like, when I think through, how do we make this for most people? Like, we need to start by proving that it's possible to do it in our dream scenario of, like, what is possible and what can we actually make exist?
Yeah.
So that was just the input part of it. And then there was the actual production to get consistency and to have it, again, not only be good, but the best product ever. And man, I don't need to have this be an eight-hour diatribe about meat and food science, but the amount of complexity and stuff that Josh and I had to learn to figure out how to actually get a meat product consistent that tastes amazing is nuts. It is crazy. We like literally had to effectively invent a new way to do air drying, and that now is hopefully can be used for other companies. Like, I don't want ours to be the only one. I want everyone to have a new standard. And so, again, we have a lot of ways to go here to make sure that this is the best product, but this is something that, like, we had to figure out along the way. And most meat sticks are cured like a salami. And this is a very big difference. Even different meat snacks like a jerky are cooked. So there's a difference between cooked, cured, cooked and cured, or air dried. So, I mean, to make it very simple, cured requires a massive amount of preservatives, because what you're doing, so you're putting an intense amount of salt and different types of salt in it. There's a curing salt generally, and then different preservatives. this makes the product more like a salami. And I'm sure if you've anyone's had like prosciutto or anything like that, even like that type of meat, it's like very salty. And I don't feel great after eating those products. Right. And this is the thing of when I had to compromise other places, it was because I was eating either a cured product that made me feel awful or a product that was super high in sugar and other weird stuff with cooking in a beef jerky, which we can get to later why they do that. And so it was like, okay, how do we make something that doesn't have either of those? We had to figure out this literally 5 days of air drying it. So now that the temperature doesn't go above 78 degrees.
And it's, Fahrenheit.
Yeah, and it's put in an effectively like a wind tunnel, a hurricane tunnel, and air is blown through it, which is basically simulates how people have done it for thousands of years, which is hilarious because it's like, we're sort of like winding the clock back from technology and like taking the processing out of the food and making it as simple as possible. I'm like, duh, that's how you do this.
Right. You air dry it.
Yeah.
You don't cook it. And so just repeat that. 78 degrees Fahrenheit. Like, it's not raw, but it's not really cooked.
Yeah.
So, and so
we're going to be doing some studies to try to figure out why exactly this allows you to not put the stuff in it. Because if you cook something or to dehydrate, you still need to put some preservative on it generally, or else it will get moldy and it will grow bacteria. And I think it's because you're changing the structure of the meat to very far away from how it should be.
When you cook it.
When you cook it versus air drying, it is retaining different critical enzymes, things like that, that actually stabilize the product of the meat for a long period of time. So we've tested this out for 12 plus months with accelerated testing to make sure that there's obviously no microbiology activity. There's no bacteria. It doesn't spoil. It doesn't get rancid. It doesn't get weird.
Right.
Nutrition stays just as high. So we have like it tested all the way to 12 months already.
Yeah. So we've done accelerated testing of this to show that it doesn't, basically doesn't spoil.
Yeah.
And to reemphasize this, when you air dry, which is the sort of this proprietary technology that we've created, that we've really engineered, right? We basically made a Tesla, guys. Elon, you should be jealous. Yeah, maybe Elon will be into meat sticks next. We were first technology. It's really cool technology. This is the Lamborghini of meat sticks. Like when you air dry it, you don't have to put lactic acid, nitrates, celery powder, these preservatives that we're not a huge fan of. I didn't want to make that stuff. Just like I didn't want to put black pepper because I think it irritates a lot of people's guts. I didn't want to put celery powder. I didn't want to put sodium nitrite. I didn't want to put lactic acid in here. I didn't want to put these preservatives that you do when you cook and you cure meats.
When I would go to an airport, this is the time where like I would, or when I'm traveling, a lot of times I would have gotten different sort of meat, preserved meat products. And anytime I would eat a bunch of them, I would feel that classic sort of like really thirsty, dry, kind of like high, almost high histamine aching in the joints feeling, especially after I had mold, I was got way more sensitive to this type of stuff. And my barometer to like what sent me into the zone was just higher, mast cell activation, whatever it was. But I could just, I had a radar. I was like, I can no longer eat these things. And was more sensitive to how they impacted me. And I tried a bunch of different ones like this, these type of foods just don't work for me anymore. And again, I was selfishly trying to make something like, do I have these symptoms when I have this stuff? Like now that I can be a radar for people and you're like, oh, when I eat this and feel good, there's got to be something in here that is missing. Obviously, there's the things that we're not putting in there that we're avoiding. But yeah, I mean, I feel completely different when I eat this product versus other stuff.
You told me you feel great when you eat this.
We got a testimony from my friend. I showed it to you before we started recording. Yeah. That said, I sent him a bunch of products to review the site and just give us feedback. And he said, I'm eating a bunch of these meat sticks and I don't know what it is, but like I feel crazy energy and I feel amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't expecting that. It's pretty sweet.
You're eating a bunch of almost raw meat and organs.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Freaking fantastic. What's interesting is the way that we process meats impacts us as humans. And I've talked about this in my social media that one of the reasons I like cooking my steak medium rare is because some things are denatured when we cook it. And obviously, if you cook a steak, you're eating it immediately after you cook it. Mm-hmm. But I like eating meat that's not well done. Yeah. And you know, back to the organ supplement thing, one of the fascinating things about freeze drying is that freeze drying seems to preserve a lot of the unique nutrients in these organs as well. So this is the type of stuff that I'm all about, is like, how do we help people get these nutrients in these foods in a way that preserves the nutrients as well?
Yeah.
That's really important. And to make a meat stick that does that is just, it's freaking, it's really earth, you know, like groundbreaking in a lot of ways.
Yeah. It's unique. Also tastes incredible. The team at Perfect Keto, when I was building that company, hated me because as we were making, especially stuff with food products, I used to be fat kid. So I have a very, like, I love stuff that tastes good. I'm obsessed with just like the hedonic pleasure of something that is really enjoyable. I know you could just go Spartan mode and eat the most plain stuff every day.
That's my
like,
weirdness,
love
that's the things that,
yeah, like it's buried deep in me. And I reject anything that's not 100% perfect. That the fat kid needs to be like, oh, this is like, I would eat this all day, every day. And it like became a running joke at Perfect Keto. And Josh had to experience that when we were going through. He's like, this tastes pretty good. I'm like, trash. Trash, throw them away, over and over and over and over again. I mean, even my wife Martha, who is more of the organ queen, who could tell me if there was any trace organ in there, would be like, "Oh yeah, these are pretty good." Like, no, not good enough. And then we just that specificity of like must be the best source, must be the most nutrient dense, must also be the best tasting, and that trifecta, man. We did it. And like, there was times over the last, especially 8 months, where desperate texts and calls. You're like, I don't think we can do this, man. Like,
yeah.
Like low points. And I'm glad we stuck it through because we're finally at a point again where we perfected this process. And man, the amount of things that we had to figure out, of checking the pH at every single step and mixing this ingredient first and then that one and then this step into the grind plate, and it has to be this size, and the speed at which we fill it into the casing has to be this, and then how we put it on the, like, everything matters in how you make a product like this, which is really annoying. But now we like have a actual process where we can repeatedly do this over and over and over again.
This is raw. Awesome. This is meat alchemy.
Yes,
it is. It's meat magic. This is meat. This is art.
Can I get a title of meat wizard?
Yes, meat wizard. The meat. The meat Gandalf. The Gandalf of meat.
I'll take it. As long as it comes with a wand.
Raw meat artistry, man. This is like art. It's like, yeah, this is meat wizardry for sure. So I think that we're just super proud of it. And if people listening to this, like, if this isn't the best meat stick that you've ever had, we will give you your money back. Like, this is the best meat stick you will ever taste. And you will not taste the organs in here, but they're in there nourishing you.
And not only that, what I found to have gotten the most satisfaction in my career from effectively listening to people, that starts with the seeds of what do I want, and making that and saying, do other people want this? And if they do, then listening to them and then figuring out, like, okay, what else do you want? How else do you want this to change? Do you want it in a different form? Like, having touch with people and them giving me feedback so I can iterate on things and improve and provide value for people is like sort of what keeps me going every single day.
Yeah.
And so that is like when I think about in this product, if you don't like it, let us know. And the whole point of this is, yes, to like, we have an idea of what we want to exist for people, but really what we want to do is listen to people and provide people with the gaps that they're finding. Like, oh, it's really hard for me to have access to this. I don't know the source of my, does it, Paul talks about glyphosate and honey. Does my honey have glyphosate? You know, is the source of the tallow good and rejected? Like, there's so many things that people have questions about that I want to solve for them. And we need feedback from people to be able to do that to the fullest capacity.
Yes, if you don't like the meat stick, let us know. We'll make it better. And let us know what products you want us to make, because Lineage is going to make lots of cool things, lots of animal-based foods. The vision for this company is for it to be an animal-based food company. This is just the first product. We have all sorts of great things in the works that are coming down the pipe. So we talked about the trials. We talked about the inputs. We talked about the quality. We talked a little bit about, let's say, I just want to touch on a little bit why I wasn't a fan of celery powder and nitrates. So this is a very contentious issue, but I think if you look at the medical literature, we just don't know that these are benign for humans. So nitrites are NO2 minus, nitrates are NO3. And like nitrites get converted to nitrates. And just because you're getting nitrates can get converted to nitrites in the human body, there's potential that these are not great for humans. They're potentially harmful. The signals are not fully fleshed out. Certainly people can have reactions to them, and they're in celery powder. Celery powder is what is used by, quote, healthy manufacturers who don't want to put sodium nitrite. If you go to a grocery store and you just get bacon, it's going to have nitrites in it. It's going to have nitrates in it. It's going to have sodium nitrite in the bacon. And so healthy food companies, quote unquote, are making bacon with celery powder, and they can call it organic, even though the celery doesn't have to be organic. And we don't actually know if the nitrates and the nitrites coming from the celery powder are benign for humans. This is a contentious issue. So it's just important to understand that I feel very proud of the fact that those are not in these meat sticks, because,
yeah,
and I'll just I'll just put in there that every other meat stick you see in the grocery store has those things in it. It has celery powder because it's cured, because it's cooked, because it's not air dried, because they didn't make a Tesla.
I mean, not only that, I think that it's not a bad thing on philosophy around why they're using it, which is it effectively kills things. It kills microbiology, bacteria.
Right. Yeah, we're gonna, yeah.
But do I want to be eating things that kill living things?
Right.
Or would I rather have a process like air drying that takes care of that for us?
And your personal experience and mine are valid. There's this debate happening in the nutrition space. I think that anecdotes are valid.
Yeah. Is it RCT? Do we have an RCT that these are good tasting sticks?
Right. Yeah, we do have. We could have a randomized controlled trial that.
Human study?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So like the anecdotes are valid. And I told you the story that when I was in residency, I would go to Central. Oh, what's it freaking called? No, it's called. I was in Seattle at the University of Washington. It's called like Pacific PC. I was like, there was like a co-op. It's PCC. The PCC co-op in Seattle. I would go to PCC. And I would get these chicken sausages. And they tasted good, but I never felt great after them. So I've had my own experiences that echo yours. Like, a lot of the stuff tastes good in the moment, and the manufacturers have good intentions, but whether or not humans feel good eating this stuff is valuable. And so I didn't have great experiences with processed sausages, with celery powder, and these other preservatives in them myself, and I didn't, lactic acid, you know, these ingredients in there that just made me feel weird. It was a bummer because it was very convenient. You don't even have to cook those things. They come to you already cooked, like these Applegate Farms, you know, like chicken sausages. I didn't have to cook them. You can just eat them cold.
I went through a phase of crushing those things.
Yeah, yeah. And I never felt great with them. And it took a lot of kind of variable, multivariable self-examination to be like, why don't I feel great right now? That was really at the beginning of that was a chapter in my story before I went strict carnivore, but those things are very convenient and they're supposed to have good inputs and they say they're organic, but I didn't feel great eating them. And so I didn't want that stuff in our meat sticks because those anecdotes are valuable. I know there are people who are eating other meat sticks on a variety of qualities and intentionality that will feel better with ours, that will like ours more, that will appreciate the quality of the ingredients, the nutrition, and the way they feel after them, because that's everything. You want to feel good. It's to taste good, but this is one of my metrics for food. It has to taste good, and I have to feel good after. Right. And that's in my sort of alien, weird brain that I'm only slightly self-conscious about. If I don't feel good after I eat a food, I don't care how good it tastes. I will never eat it again. And I mean never. Like, I will never eat a cookie again in my whole life, because I don't feel good when I eat them.
What about a different batch of cookies?
If I felt good eating, maybe.
But what if I made you a cookie out of meat and heart?
Then I would eat a meat cookie. Yeah. That's like the heart burger I made you yesterday. I would eat a meat cookie. But that's the way I think about it. Everyone's not that strict in their mind, and they don't have to be. It's sort of my foible.
Well, I mean, this is the question of what is the purpose of food? And I think the calories in, calories out, ridiculous idea of how to look at food is just an input. There's more decisions about how you choose what you eat besides it's just a nutrient, it's just a macronutrient, it's just a micronutrient.
Right.
There's so many other things that go into choosing a food. Where are my dollars going?
Yes.
Are they going to a massive corporation? Who produced this? How did they produce it? What, like, do I want to eat food that came from effectively a giant factory that treated animals terribly?
That gave cows grass pellets.
Yeah. Yeah. Do I want to eat it in isolation without anybody? Do I want to have something that doesn't taste great? Like, there's so many different ways to think about what should you actually eat besides what a study in mice said or even a human RCT. That I think people, like, listen to yourself, ask yourself these questions, because your individuality will guide you to the right direction.
Yeah. So like so many levels. Do I believe in the mission of the company? Are they doing good work in the world? Is it caring for animals is the highest quality inputs and the meat. And then, yeah, like we talked about, for me, how do I feel afterwards?
Yep.
And that's such an important thing for me. I'll just echo that and then we'll move on. Is that when you, and this is something I recommend to people so often, is that you simplify your diet, either with an animal-based diet or some intentional type of diet, so that you feel the ripple, so that you can separate the signal from the noise, so you know that you don't feel good. What did I eat that made me not feel good? That's such a powerful thing. Because every once in a while in Costa Rica, I still eat something and I get a headache and I think, what did I eat? Why did I get a headache? Because humans are not supposed to get headaches. And most of us are exposed to things, whether it's mold in our environment or a pesticide or a contaminant in our food, that's making you feel bad. and you know this, but that to me is like such a light bulb moment that I feel very grateful to be in a place where I can control my environment enough that most of the time, 97% of the time, I feel good. Mm-hmm. So when I don't feel good, it's like, what did I do? And I can change that and refine it. And so I want people to eat this and feel confident that they feel good after they eat it.
If you guys have been listening to this podcast, you know about the new kid on the block, Lineage Provisions. I'm super excited to share this with you guys. I'm going to show you what the meat stick looks like. This is the first of its kind, grass-fed, grass-finished meat stick, regeneratively raised, containing organs. It also contains liver and heart with salt, vinegar, and a collagen casing. That is it, guys. There's no lactic acid in here. There is no celery powder. There are no nitrates because it is air dried. This is dried at 78 degrees Fahrenheit and never heated above that temperature. These are amazing. People are loving them. At this point, we have sold out three times. They should be back in stock when this podcast releases. You can go to lineageprovisions.com if you want to try our new Lineage beef sticks with organs, the best beef sticks on the planet. These are the best snack you're ever going to eat. I promise you, there's a guarantee on that too, or your money back. And there are all sorts of other good things coming from Lineage, guys. So stay tuned with us. Sign up to be notified if we are sold out. But we're just so excited that everyone is loving these. And we are going to continue making the highest quality animal-based foods that we can. We've got a lot of other good stuff in store. So find us. Check us out, lineageprovisions.com or lineageprovisions on all of the socials.
To echo the point you made earlier about we're not a machine, that I don't think the quest is ever over. And what I appreciate about your stance is that you have a large platform, but you'll change your mind and try new things and always experiment. And I found the same thing, that what's made me feel good has changed over time. And that's just the reality of it. And like, I'm always trying to think through, okay, well, what will happen if this is the case? And I like trimmed it down to a lot of essentials for sure. But I think it's just something I want to encourage people is it's an ongoing journey that I've learned, that I don't think there's any end point where like I know exactly what I'm gonna eat every single day and I know my lifestyle and I know all these things. Like, I'm always experimenting with stuff and we're always chatting around, like, what are you, kind of weird stuff are you doing?
Yeah.
And I think that's, as long as people can enjoy that experience of like just figuring out how to best inhabit this body we have, I mean, that's what excites me about all this work we're doing.
I recently came across a study. It was a small study in humans showing that vitamin K2 and D3 supplementation increased penis size. And boy, that was...
So you've experimented a lot.
I was experimenting.
Just chugging it.
I was so interested. So I figured out what cheeses had the most vitamin K2. And, you know, I was like, okay, I don't know if this is really the way to go. But it's a I'm super interested. And like, I think the study is probably not rigorous enough, but who knows? I mean, it was a study done with 100 micrograms of vitamin K2 in the MK4 form as a supplement and 50,000 IUs of vitamin D3, which is a huge amount of vitamin D. So who knows if you can actually increase penis size. But
what was your girth data?
We'll put it in the show notes, guys.
Perfect.
we'll put some B-roll up right now. My measurements.
LineageProvisions.com/girth data.
Paul's penis. Great. Yeah. OnlyFans. Yeah. So it was just fascinating, but I don't know if you can actually increase your penis size with more vitamin K2, but it's the point. I mean,
it's one of these things that also like vitamin D and K2. Okay. Sun and dairy.
Sun and dairy or meat, you know, like, but being interested in that led me down some rabbit holes that were very interesting. And it was learning that I didn't experience. It's never ending.
Yeah.
And I also did a podcast recently about my experiments with rice, which didn't work for me, but works for a lot of people. Great. You know, I went to the ends of the earth to get like the most organic rice and ferment the crap out of it and then pressure cook it. And I still don't feel great when I eat rice, right? Creatine, I've started thinking about in my diet, all these things. But I'll tell you this, because I think this is valuable for people to hear. Seeing the study about penis size and vitamin K2 made me think, what foods have the most vitamin K2? Mm. So if you look at it, pork ribs and dark meat chicken have a lot of vitamin K2.
Natto?
Natto does, but it's not MK4. Mm. So MK4 is in pork and chicken. And so I thought, okay, maybe I need to start eating more dark meat chicken. Natto is MK7, mm-hmm. and we don't actually know if that's that valuable for humans, right? And cheeses is MK9, MK10, MK11. So again, we don't know if that's as valuable for humans. The Rotterdam study, and I will circle back to why the chicken and pork thing did not pan out for me.
Penis size didn't increase.
The penis size. penis size is the same, guys, unfortunately. It is what it is. Like, it's okay. Again, with the B-roll up, my penis pics right here. Might have to edit this part out of the podcast. But Rotterdam study is a fascinating observational study from Rotterdam in the Netherlands. The researchers say that the people in the Rotterdam study who were eating the most vitamin K2, that they were tertiles, the highest vitamin K2 was more than 32 micrograms of vitamin K2 per day, had the biggest penis size. No, they didn't have that as an outcome. They had the lowest incidence of cardiovascular disease, better longevity, lowest mortality, and decreased levels of calcific aortic sclerosis in the Rotterdam study. It's observational, but the researchers note in the study that the foods, and they went through and looked at the foods people were eating with the most vitamin K2 were, Netherlands, meat, eggs, dairy, mm-hmm. butter. Butter is very high in vitamin K2 because it's a fat-soluble vitamin. Those foods did not associate with other healthy behaviors. So this is what's hard about observational studies, is this healthy user bias, the fact that when you look at vegetable consumption, people eating more vegetables tend to have healthier behaviors, and so vegetables are associated with better outcomes. Does that mean vegetables are healthy for humans? Maybe. It could also be that it's just a confounding thing. But the Rotterdam study is fascinating, and I cite it because I get pushback online when I talk about observational studies. And I think that that pushback is welcomed, but my response is that in these observational studies that I'm talking about, I'm thinking about whether there are confounding variables and whether people are using healthy user bias or unhealthy user bias. In the Rotterdam study, there's probably no healthy user bias because people eating those foods were not doing healthy behaviors, but they still had the best longevity, the lowest mortality at least, the best incidence, the lowest incidence of cardiovascular disease, and lowest calcification of the aortic valve. This is freaking fascinating to me. So vitamin K2, which is found in our lineage meat sticks, by the way, for sure, is super valuable for humans, not found in plant foods other than fermented foods from the bacteria like natto. MK4 is what was used in the study on penis size. So I thought, well, where do I get MK4 in my diet? Pork and chicken. You go down the rabbit hole, you realize, going full circle to our previous conversations, that pork and chicken are fed diets that are deficient in vitamin K2 in the United States and across the world. And so their feed is supplemented with something called vitamin K3, which is menadione. Excess amounts of menadione are toxic for humans. Chickens are so high in vitamin K2 in the USDA database because they're supplemented with vitamin K3, which gets converted into vitamin K2. But
also still has K3?
It may still have vitamin K3 in there.
And so let's hit Stefan up and get some data. He'll have it for sure.
I just thought, shit. And so now I was excited about chicken again and pork. And now I'm not super excited about chicken and pork fed vitamin K3, menadione, because certainly if we draw a parallel with something like folic acid, right? Unmetabolized folic acid. Folic acid is not a form of folate that the human body makes or can use easily. You can convert folic acid into dihydrofolate and tetrahydrofolate, but the enzyme that does that, dihydrofolate reductase, is saturated probably at about 225 micrograms of folic acid. Most prenatal vitamins have 400 micrograms plus of folic acid, so what do you end up with? You end up with unmetabolized folic acid in the human body, and that can be problematic for humans. We really believe this to be true. There's evidence to suggest that's a real problem for humans. I worry about excess amounts of vitamin K3 in chickens and pork, something I've never talked about before, leading to unmetabolized menadione in chicken and pork. Yes, they have more vitamin K2, but menadione is not something we should be eating as humans. Vitamin K3 doesn't look great for us. So it's very...
not tested, not in a package. Who knows if it's in there? It's just given to the animals. And then
given to the animals. Yeah. So this, we went down this rabbit hole based on my experimentation and, you know...
I have one for you.
Okay.
What's the beef with seafood?
Me.
If it's, I know that the thing you gave me before is I don't have a clean source, but if we have tested for all these different things, would you eat seafood?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my beef with seafood is the cleanliness of the seafood.
Can I ship you some Seatopia and see what you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll try it.
We have all the reports. So this is something that's really interesting about, there's like some rogue food companies that are trying to do this transparency thing, right? And James over at Seatopia is testing for heavy metals, microplastic, glyphosate, down...
PFAs.
Yeah, down the list. Crazy stuff. And I found it to also be, not probably a coincidence, the best tasting fish ever. So I'm just curious, like, would you eat that?
Absolutely.
I'm very curious how you would feel with fish for a little while besides, or in replace of red meat.
I would do the experiment.
Because there's a lot of comments in your live yesterday of... fish, eat fish, only fish. It's the only healthy thing.
Oh yeah. And I think, well, that, to me, I've done so much content on this. Fish is not the most healthy thing. It's probably the least healthy meat, unfortunately. So I, this is a problem for me. This is a challenge because I want to create content and share ideas that are helpful for people. And I think meat in general, whether it's pork, chicken, fish, or red meat from a variety of sources, has unique nutrients that are not found in plant foods. If people feel good eating a lot of plant foods, great, but I think that every human needs to eat some meat. And A lot of humans that I know feel better eating more meat than plant foods. And some humans that I know, and thousands of people online, sometimes remove or resolve autoimmune conditions when they eat less plant foods or get rid of things, which is sort of the sort of, this is the holdover of my carnivore days. The idea that if you're thriving, don't change anything. If you're not thriving, do the experiments. And a lot of people feel better when they cut out some or all plant foods from their diet. So that's the way I feel about it now. If you're eating vegetables and you like them and you feel fine, great. If you're eating nuts and you like them and you feel fine, great. But a lot of people feel better without those foods, or at least some of those foods. But in terms of fish, I think fish is a meat, it's an animal product, so it has unique nutrients that are often not found in plant foods, but it's just so polluted. Even wild-caught fish is so polluted if you look at most of it. So what these other companies like you're describing are doing is exciting to me. I just haven't tried it, and I can't get it here in Costa Rica, but I know that most of the fish I can get here or when I'm traveling is full of arsenic, lead, mercury, cadmium, full of PFAs, which are perfluoroalkyl substances, which are forever chemicals, which are clearly endocrine disruptors. It's full of microplastics. It's full of all kinds of garbage in the oceans. And so I don't want to eat it. I don't feel great or better when I eat it. And believe me, I've experimented with everything. I've experimented with, which is why I like the lab of my own experience, right? I've experimented with shellfish and all these things, and I don't feel better or even good when I eat it most of the time. But I would experiment with it all the time.
I'm just trying to prime the pump for a lineage mussel and oyster. This is what I like. If we test and get the best source possible.
Yeah, we could do lineage fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at, because this is another thing that I want to exist. I like this stuff. And even the Patagonia stuff, I'm like, ah, man, it doesn't have any, like, I don't have to pay to test this out myself every single batch.
Yeah.
Is it clean? I don't know.
I think
so. I want to get a supply chain going of at least shellfish and go from there.
Yeah. It's completely in line with what we want to do with lineage. Great, the highest quality foods that people can have.
Nutrient dense.
Yeah, yeah. Can have variety. Yeah, and I think it's possible. Yeah, absolutely. So I would totally try it. I don't eat much fish. And I think that if people want to eat fish, just make sure that you're honest with yourself and test your heavy metals. There's no real good test for PFAs, forever chemicals, that I'm aware of. There's no real great test for microplastic levels in your body. Yeah. So you can't really see those things, but they're in your foods and they're probably harmful for us. So it's a problem.
There's this doctor that I met in Bend that had some patients go to this crazy wellness clinic in Switzerland that apparently has this machine that will do plasmapheresis and has a filter for microplastics and PFAs.
Oh my God.
And he showed me some of the examples of what came out of people's blood that they tested, and it was so it wasn't just like, oh, this whatever particulate, or like
right.
Some mineral came out and this is what it looks like. No, they tested for it and confirmed that it was microplastics and other weird endocrine disrupting things. It was, you know, like an old film canister.
Yeah.
It was like two of those stacked high.
Per human?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Which, if you think about it, I mean, the what the studies are showing is like if you use a plastic cutting board, it's like having something like a credit card of microplastics a year or whatever.
You cannot use a plastic cutting board.
Things like that. And then you have 15 different things that all compound. Like, it makes sense. I'm sure we're excreting some of it, storing some of our tissues.
Hopefully we poop some of it out. But if it's in your blood.
It's crazy.
And you're doing plasma, that's crazy.
He showed me, and like, I need to go to this clinic.
That's exactly what I was thinking in my mind. Like,
give me a machine here in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
We can't do it in the US because it's apparently not approved by whatever regulatory body that needs to approve it, but
wow,
that's something you learn to it.
I want a plasma phoresis, the microplastics out of my body, but I'm sure I have some, but I am super intentional about that. I don't use plastic cutting boards. I travel with a freaking pan. I don't use nonstick, right?
Kevin came to my house, you're like, bro, I need a pan.
Because I was traveling. I was traveling. I travel with a pan. I don't use nonstick. You know, we're at a nice Airbnb here in Costa Rica. There's freaking Teflon right over there. It drives me crazy. But I think that people need to know the sources of microplastics. They are things like fish, you know.
Water,
plastic cutting boards.
Plastic containers, food storage.
I've heard also that a big source of contamination, people, is dishes in your home that get filled with dust from your house. Lands on the dishes. I actually heard that was one of the biggest sources of people getting microplastics. So I think that
just like floating around in the environment and then settles and then you
get
that?
Yes. So if you have a carpet which is made from plastics, you are aerosolizing plastics when you walk in your home.
That's lovely.
Yeah. And those are landing on your dishes. And so you guys have to rinse your dishes off before you eat off of them if you want to avoid this. And you should rinse the dishes off no matter what, because you're probably using a dishwasher detergent that has alcohol ethoxylates in them, which are potentially disrupting your gut. I mean, my parents stayed in an Airbnb here in Costa Rica. I brought them all out. My mom, my dad, my sister, niece and nephew, her husband. This is my crazy brain, Anthony. I'm in the Airbnb. There's a dishwasher.
Throwing everything away.
No. But before I drank out of any glasses, I was rinsing the glass off. And as I'm rinsing the glass, I can feel the film of the dishwasher detergent on the glass. I know that if I drink milk or coconut water or orange juice out of that glass, I'm going to be ingesting the dishwasher detergent with it. And this is a level that, look, if you're thriving, who cares? If you're not thriving, that I just want to educate people on. So whether it's a dishwasher detergent, I think you should rinse it for microplastics anyway, but most people don't live in places that are open air. So they are, and most people do live in places that have carpets. So you can get microplastics that way. But yeah, I wish there were a test we could do for people to show them the microplastics in there. Environments. It's crazy. And we don't even understand what they're doing now. And they're in everything, especially in fish.
Yeah. And then nanoplastics now are a thing, which is
smaller than microplastics. Yeah. Where are nanoplastics?
You haven't seen this?
No.
Yeah. They're now coming with a new class that's called nanoplastics.
And?
Probably just as bad, if not worse, because it goes into, perfuses into different cellular structures than microplastics.
It's everywhere that microplastics are?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
And like everywhere in the world, you can't get away from it.
Yeah. That, well.
Like, can't even be filtered out by charcoal.
All right, so then we're just, well, that doesn't even matter. I don't care as much about that because we're all, you know.
There's nothing you can do.
There's
no intervention that you can actually do. Who cares?
Stop freaking out about it. Yeah, if I can't do an intervention, then there's nothing you can do. The one thing I do want to mention, just as an aside, just as a nugget for people, it's not related to really what we're talking about here, but it could be in the future. Well, I guess it is because we really want to make a high-quality tallow, is that if you look at PFAs, so perfluoroalkyl substances, forever chemicals, potentially absorbed through the skin. I did some content about Lululemon leggings, having PFA in the leggings. And I was just looking at something today before we recorded this podcast, and they were testing for fluorine, which is how you test for PFAs, in something. I'll think of it as, and they were finding that there were significant amounts of fluorine, PFAs in something, but I'll think of it, or I'll pull it up and I'll talk about it in the podcast. We found a study looking at PFAs in oils. And another reason to not eat seed oils is the amount of PFAs in seed oils.
In seed oils.
Yeah, there's PFAs in seed oils.
From the bottle that they're stored in or from the production method?
Probably both.
Yeah.
And the reason I don't think it's entirely the bottle is because olive oil, although it could be the bottle, olive oil had the highest amount of PFAs. Mm. Like 2 to 3 times what seed oils had. So that was crazy to me. That, you know, olive oil is all the rage now. And I think olive oil is probably better than seed oils, especially if you get a good one. But there's no standards. And this goes back to lineage and what we care about and transparency and testing as much as over-testing our products to show people what's in them. I've never seen an olive oil actually talk about the amount of PFAs in the olive oil. Yeah. So if you guys want to use olive oil, you're probably putting it on a salad, which kind of makes me do the, you know, like, okay, whatever, emoji. But great. Salads are better than junk food. And if you eat salad and you feel good on it, fantastic. But I hope that maybe one of the things that I hope with Lineage is that by creating insanely high quality standards, other companies will follow suit. And I would not buy an olive oil now unless I knew how many PFAs were in it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the thing that I've changed my mind on most about nutrition and health over the last 5 years is the unknown environmental toxins that we're getting that we're not shown. We have no idea of knowing. And I think that the reason why it's interesting to me so much more lately is thinking through and looking at the rise in different types of conditions coming up. So when I think it was more of the big food, ultra processed convenient foods, we had things like obesity, diabetes, et cetera, skyrocketing heart disease. Now it's in a very different realm of puberty, infertility, like really weird systemic changes that are new over the last like 10, 15, 20 years, completely separate in my mind, probably additional and creative too, but separate from the sort of OG chronic diseases that we saw in the 70s sort of really spike up. And that I think is a function of like, we now have like this double whammy that we were talking about before, of like the things that we're not getting in our food and the things that we are now that we don't know about. And I am, not gonna say like paranoid about it, but I just want to know. And the fact that I can't know pisses me off. This is all I just do. Like, and it's expensive to send it in. Even if I tell people about this, and I did a long post on glyphosate, did a deep dive on that. And you give that information to people and they go, well, now what? I know I could avoid foods that have glyphosate in them, but I don't know how to know which foods have glyphosate in them.
Because they're not tested.
Right. And that's tricky. I mean, even from the farm level, I know of some farms that are little 40-acre parcels that are surrounded by farms. That they're doing everything perfectly, but they're surrounded by farms that spray, and then that spray basically goes on their land. So what are you even supposed to do in that regard? Like it's really tough to... And then it seeps into the groundwater, and then they're pulling from a well that pulls from that without filtering it, and it's getting really complicated. And I think that looking into the future, when I think like what would be a dream scenario for me with Lineage would be two things. First would be addressing this is like creating a new standard, like almost like a new nutrition facts panel where we can open source our methods of testing and make it something that consumers now demand for a new thing of, I want to know what's in and not in my foods. And here are the things that we've done research on that we know, like we test for every single batch. So people can know like, okay, I'm not getting exposed to these 500 different herbicides and pesticides, et cetera. Second would be showing that the brand, like you can actually make something like this and have a business that is self-sustaining that with the intention of nourishing people instead of extracting from them.
Yeah.
Like those are my two, like if we can do that, great.
That's
but it's like, it's frightening to me to not, to like go somewhere and even with farms, not be able to know what is in this. Like what were the farms around it? Like what is happening here? And it's insane that this is the world we live in where we have to be so paranoid about what comes into our, even our natural food supply.
It's scary. I think it's disempowering for people, but it doesn't have to be. I think knowledge is power. Know better, do better. And the more you know, the better decisions you can make.
Yeah. The thing is we have the tools to create a new standard.
Yeah.
We can test for this. We just don't. There's no incentive to yet because people don't know that they can. And I saw a study, I tried to find it and put it in here, but organic kale, you'll love this. Like, it was an organic vegetable though. So it should not be having high amounts of pesticides and herbicides. Actually had the highest levels. And I think this is because of water or whatever, but it likely grows longer. So it has more time to bioaccumulate natural environmental things. That's my hypothesis.
Yeah.
And so
what's in the water table?
Yeah, what's in the water? What's in the air? What's sprayed on it? Like what's sprayed around it? But so even if you're using organic, like doesn't ensure that things are good, which I saw that I was like, I might as well just give up here.
Well, you
like,
be,
go back to growing my own food again. But
yeah,
this is just like, how do we create the easiest way to test things and help other brands also do that and farmers and everything? And I think Stefan's doing great work on that, but it's crazy. It's nuts.
So we found some interesting stuff, my research team, about leafy greens accumulating heavy metals too.
Mm.
Something I haven't talked about much, but will soon. Like leafy greens are just a part of a plant that accumulates heavy metals. So thallium and kale has been talked about, but lettuce, people say there's nothing in iceberg lettuce. Well, there's heavy metals in your iceberg lettuce. So you're welcome. It's crazy. It's just like, it's just knowledge is power. Know better, do better. It's just another thing that I'm trying to help people understand. And when they're making calculations and they're doing this calculus of like, what foods should they be eating? I remembered the thing that I thought about earlier. I saw there was an article saying that there's PFAs in fast food packaging. No surprises there. So like McDonald's French fry things have PFAs. A lot of fast food packaging, the wrapper for the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich has PFAs in it. So it's leaching into your food. So just crazy stuff of PFAs all over the place in the environment. The Consumer Reports was testing those things for fluorine and finding, I think it was parts per million amounts of fluorine in those packaging of your food. So now we have to think, yeah. And so at every level, we're thinking about this, you know, we're thinking, okay, we're going to test our food for all these things. We're going to make sure that we have the best packaging at Lineage and we're constantly improving it. And we're testing all the food that we produce for all these things and trying to make it as high quality as possible.
Yeah. It's going to be a journey. All right, man. Well, should we
answer some questions?
Yeah. So we launched yesterday, like Paula said, and crazy response, sold out, which is amazing. So if you're one of the people who supported, really appreciate taking the first swing and trying us out. But got tons of questions and a lot of repeat stuff. So just thought we could address some of this. I can pull this up, list here. I think the most common one that we got, which is very understandable, is, are you going to be able to make the price lower anytime soon?
Yeah.
The answer is yeah. I mean, that's our number one goal. I think that there's a lot of things here. Like, I think people are comparing us sometimes to a Slim Jim or something like that, and we're never going to be at that price. There's no way.
And we talked about why.
Yeah. And if you actually compare where we're at currently to more of like modern meat snack brands, there's a bunch of them out there. We're actually the lowest per ounce. So if you look at per ounce compared to any of other brands, like we're actually a little bit lower than all of them. And
yes.
Like that was another precondition of mine of needs to be able to be as cheap or cheaper than like sort of like whatever is the gold standard currently that exists on top of nutrient dense and sourcing and taste, like needs to be price competitive. Like, and that leads to, you know, why we're not in retail because we don't have crazy margins to be able to push in there. But as we start building out more farms and getting more people on board and really like getting dialed in with our production, like we should be able to drive the prices down. And that's our intention, is to make the most affordable and most nutrient dense thing that nourishes people. So that's for sure like one of our number one priorities.
And it was interesting because I did a live yesterday on Instagram and got a lot of questions about, will this be in grocery stores, Publix, wherever people were, the local grocery store. And it's just interesting that people ask that, and why would they understand? It's interesting that people ask that, and I don't understand why they, I don't know why they would understand the supply chain model, yeah. But like, it can't be there. The margins are, yeah. It's like we actually could not sell it there and have the company run. Because of the margins.
When you buy something from a grocery store and you look at the price, let's say it's $10, typically, depending on like what promo is going on at the grocery store, 80% of whatever you pay for goes to everyone that is responsible for getting that thing on shelf and selling it to you in a grocery store. And only 20% goes back to the brand. How the hell are you supposed to have 20% of what's on the actual tag to be able to make your product, run your own business, keep your own lights on, pay your employees, pay the farmers decent wages, pay taxes, like pay all these things of like actually making the business run? It's almost impossible unless you have a crazy high margin that you can sell in and absorb that cost. So there's distributors, marketers, the actual retailers. Like think about when you go into somewhere like a Whole Foods or a grocery store, like you're literally paying when buying that product for the electricity, the employees, and the soap that's cleaning the floor, and the shelves that you're picking it up off of. And hopefully we get to a point where we can have the pricing to be able to do that, because I would love to have this at gas stations and in airports in the areas where I want to impulsively buy something that's healthy for me. But right now in Riley Gay, there's just no possible way.
No possible way. Not with this level of quality either. Like it's just,
and that's why it's just mind blowing to me where some of these snacks are on a shelf for a couple bucks at any of these stores, Sprouts, Whole Foods, Safeway, wherever. And I do the math, because we explore with Perfect Keto, this is the same thing that happened of like, we're like, there's no way we can maintain our quality standard and give the retailers what they want as far as their cut of the pie. And I look at it, I'm like, there's no way that they're paying the inputs for what we're paying for. There's no possible way. We've even talked to our suppliers and said like, what if we buy all the meat supply? What would our price be? And it still is way higher than what would be possible to have priced at some of these things. That's why I just question the quality that some of these brands have.
And we know, and you know, and we know because you're in the industry, that grass-fed on some of these labels, like we talked about, is not what people imagine it to be.
Unfortunately.
It's not the B-roll that we showed earlier of me on a farm in Australia. It's a farm in Chile or Argentina with grass pellets or something. Well, gotta be.
Tough. So another one is your product organic? So this comes also to our sourcing and where the farms come from. And organic on a label is something that when you list this out, the farm that has this certification by a governing body has to pay for somebody to come out. And it's typically, depending on what certification body, $10,000+ a year. Farms that are small, who are doing things the right way, have no free capital. They don't have any extra money to pay for standards like this. The thing that's heartbreaking is that those farms that are doing it that way are actually doing above organic, beyond organic standards. And those are the ones that like we go to. They're not spraying, like they're doing like everything that we request in organic, plus way more stuff. They're rotating their cattle. They're never doing any of these things. And the Force of Nature did some good content. And like I've talked to them about them going to an organic blueberry orchard in California versus a regenerative grazed field. And it looks like death on the organic blueberry farm. Like organic is not an indication of a good operation. It's just a list of things you check and give to a bureaucrat that says, will you give me organic stamp of the package?
Right.
And so maybe our farms in the future will help them and we'll subsidize it and we'll help them with that so they can, you know, claim that they're organic. But for now, we are making sure that the standards are beyond organic.
Yeah, these farms I went to in Victoria in Australia were like, the farm's been in the family for 100 years. They've never sprayed a chemical on the farm in 100 years. Like, that's way beyond organic. But is it certified organic? No. But it's beyond organic.
Yeah, I mean,
super high quality.
We wouldn't eat anything that would not meet an organic standard or anything beyond. So, I mean, this is like Paul. Yeah. Look at Paul's standards. He literally ate this on camera yesterday. So we have video of Paul eating proof. It. So he approves. So we know.
And we're gonna show testing for pesticides and these kind of things on the website.
Yeah. I think is this, what does it taste like? I think we addressed that earlier. And I think that the most important thing for me is that people like my wife who are so averse to eating organs and even like the ancestral blends that like Force Nature sells and other companies that are awesome that I eat tons of, she picks up on that. Like I cannot do anything to hide the organ taste even in those. So that was my standard of like, if Organ Queen can sniff it out, right, then like it is a no-go.
Right.
And we've given this to like tons of kids. They love them. And like if kids will scarf these down and ask for more, we've had several friends we've sent to that literally the samples that the parents were supposed to eat, the kids had broken into their closet and eaten all of them. They're like, God, what the hell's going on here? So if that's the case, then I would say it's pretty good. Like
you can't taste the organs. My niece and nephew love them. Like, you can't taste the organs. It tastes amazing.
And like the way that the air drying ink like keeps the fat is that it's like a very rich, meaty umami flavor naturally present. It doesn't taste like a dry, like a cured pepperoni salty type of thing. It's like a really rich and like satisfying taste.
You can taste the quality in that for sure.
I mean, I think we covered a lot of these other things of how is this different from other grass-fed meat? Are you in retail? I'll cover that. When are you going to be back in stock? So that's a question of like this. It's going to be a little rocky, I think, as we get going, just because, again, we are purchasing from very small farms and we are refining this process and doing as much as we can to do this in small batch to make sure that the quality is really high.
Yeah.
There's been other companies who recently have had to pull back in production or cancel their production because they tried to scale and quality did not meet standard, didn't taste good, didn't perform good, had to scale up and lose their quality and compromise and buy from much bigger things, much bigger farms. We're not gonna do that. So we were probably gonna sell out on a continual basis, but we're gonna try to get it back in stock as fast as possible and as much as possible to get it in the hands of people.
And you guys can go to lineageprovisions.com. You can put your email onto a notify me list and you will be notified every time it comes back in stock. Right now we're sort of restocking every week.
That's our goal, is at least every week. Like we're running batches pretty much around the clock.
Yeah. So it's not gonna be months before this is back in stock. It's going to be a week. And if you really want this, be on the drop when it drops on Mondays or Tuesdays, be on the notify me list and we'll let you know. And we're gonna scale up, and it's a good problem to have because you guys are appreciating it. It's a good problem to have because you guys are appreciating it, and we're not gonna compromise on quality, you know, to make more of these.
Yeah, this is not some like scarcity tactic. We're not like Nike withholding supply of sneakers so the prices go up and there's a line behind the block. Like, no. We literally don't have anything to sell.
Yeah, we don't have anything to sell because you guys bought it all and we can't wait to hear what you think.
Another one is, what other products are you going to make?
Tell us what you guys want.
Yeah. I have a dream list, like the mussels, oysters, a bunch of other things that we maybe keep secret that we're working on. The biggest direction that we're going to have is feedback from you, from being able to give us feedback saying, hey, we want this. We want it to be different that way. We want to, a lot of people at the live yesterday actually said, like, we want a protein powder. And there were a lot of capital protein. Like, people are like really wanting that. That's not something that I would ever anticipate had when we first launched this.
Right.
But we want to be able to be nimble and literally build this for you and make whatever you guys are looking for, whatever is challenging for you, whatever you think is not good enough, whatever you think is not high quality enough, whatever doesn't taste good enough. Like, these are our standards. We want to nourish you, have the best quality, have the best sourcing, the best tasting stuff. So let us know what you think we can improve on, and we're happy to take a shot at it.
And we've got some super exciting secret releases coming in the pipeline. Stay tuned. Again, go to lineageprovisions.com, put your email in the notify me, and you will be the first to know about the next drops. Right now, we're focusing on the meat sticks, but we've got other stuff in the pipeline coming very soon. Some super secret, amazing stuff. So you guys are gonna be stoked. This is the first product of many really cool things that are very unique in every way. And every product we make will be with the same ethos. No bullshit. Here's what I don't like about it, because there are no protein powders on the market that I will eat right now that I'm super excited about, right? So
well, I've tried to get you on a Quip and you're no-go.
Yeah. So that's something we're thinking about, all kinds of things that are in the pipeline coming.
And if you've made it to this point, I want to say thank you. Like, I don't want to come across as we're trying to sell something, because that's not at all what this is. It's more about showing people what the actual journey has been like. I was talking to Martha last night, and she was just telling me, like, you need to be more proud of what you're doing, because this is like, she's seen the back end of just like the long days of trying to get this to market and how much we care. And the team is like, has been amazing. So shout out to Jimmy and Josh for helping us get this thing live. And
that's the Lineage team. Yeah. You mentioned Josh earlier. Josh is part of the Lineage team. Jimmy's part of the Lineage team. Yeah.
Yeah. And so just, yeah, I appreciate anybody who's given us a chance. And again, like, we're building this for you guys and just wanted to tell a story. So,
yeah, I think that there's always negative comments like, you guys are just chilling and whatever. You can say that, but we're not. And there are many easier ways to make money. There are many lower quality products we can make that are easier to make, better supply chains, faster restocks, better margins. And we're not doing any of that. So I think it's okay to be proud of what we were creating.
Yeah.
And be like, no, we fucking believe in this. There's nothing like this on the market. We're transparent. And we completely are 100% okay being like, we built this product and we hope you guys like it. And we're so proud of it. And, not ashamed of it in any way, shape, or form.
And we're not trying to say that this should replace real food by any means.
No.
Like, just to be very, very clear, like, you should eat real food. This is for the edge cases, for the gaps, and for times when I want it, when you want it, when your family wants it. And that's the reality of it. Like, we always want to encourage people to take the off-ramp. And this is part of the off-ramp to eating real food.
Absolutely.
All right, man.
And then, all right. Thanks, brother.
Appreciate
it. Yeah. Stoked for people. Let us know what you guys think. See you soon.